Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, the Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, February 15th, 2019, and today we are reading from the Big Book on page 8 in Bill's story, the last paragraph, which begins, "My musing was interrupted by the telephone." Today's readers are AJN on the 12 steps, Betsy H on the 12 traditions, and reading the text are Jordan L, Jackie H, and Julie EB. The share IDs for yesterday, Thursday, February 14th, 10 a.m. meeting is 12,548. That's 12548. And for this morning's 7 a.m. meeting, the share ID is 12,550 or 12550. And our newcomer greeter today is Leslie M. Thank you all for your service. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask AJN to read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning. This is AJN, compulsive overeater in Ohio. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
Thanks a lot, AJ. And now I'll ask Betsy H. to read our 12 traditions of OA.
The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group but never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you very much, Betsy H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. There's someone's unmuted and is moving something around. If you could try to check your phone, I'd appreciate it. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 8, the fourth paragraph down, and I will ask Jordan L. to get us started. Thank you, Jordan. I don't hear you, Jordan. Press star 1 to unmute.
Good morning, Kathy. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, I can. Thanks.
My name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater this morning in Pagosa Springs, Colorado. So it's the paragraph we're reading today says, my musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course. He would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time he had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. And I guess reading over this morning before the meeting started, what came to mind right off the bat was my sort of first encounter with a vision for you specifically. I'm like truly a product of getting abstinent over the telephone line, which is pretty wild. That would be the remedy for this disease that has affected me so much for the last 30 years now, you know? Well, I guess not 30 years, but close to it, 20, 25, something like that. especially because the telephone is was so very much my enemy before this. Like, I would literally go for weeks on end without talking to anyone on the phone besides my boyfriend, who I live with. So I had to talk to him on the phone about, like, stupid stuff, like toilet paper and stuff like that, you know? And now these days, like, it's like multiple calls every single day from different people, not just in OA either. Like, it's turned into sort of this full telephone life, you know? So I just wanted to kind of point that out because it's been so important in my recovery. And it started with a call. Like, it all really started with a call. There was this lady that I had known from OA before who used to call me. She would call me and she would check in just to see sort of how I was doing. And she called on the right day one day, and I was not doing well. And for whatever reason, probably because I had been speaking to her intermittently for the last few years, I was willing to share with her that I was not doing well, that my life was falling apart, that I had nowhere else to go. I was at the end of my rope. I was at that jumping off place. I couldn't live with the food anymore and I couldn't live without it. And I told her that. And she asked me to come over to her house. She asked me to drive down to the city about an hour and a half and come and see her. And we could talk about what was going on. And it was like an instant sort of rocket into this deal, you know, except for that last line, drinkers are like that. Eaters are not really like what Bill is talking about. Like, he's talking about capturing the spirit of older days and like the airplane and the Jag. And like, it's so exciting that his friend is coming into town and blah, blah, blah. Drinkers may be like that. Eaters aren't really like that. Like, for me, it very much looks like this woman invited me over to her house. It took every ounce of willingness that I had in order to get up off of my ass and go over there and talk to her and be honest with her. I'll wrap it up because that's what eaters are like. Eaters do two things. They isolate and they eat. So going and hanging out with another compulsive overeater, that is like, that's the remedy. It's the exact opposite of what we do. That's exactly what I needed when I got here. So thanks so much, Kathy, for letting me share this morning. That's all I got.
Thanks so much, Jordan L. Okay, I will take some names and I would appreciate one at a time if possible.
Dorita P.
John K.
Okay. Wait a second. Dorita P., John K., Julie
Pat
E.
K.
Pat K.
Cindy D.
Cindy B. And who did I hear after Cindy?
Stephanie
Patty D.
Stephanie L. and Patty D. Okay, we'll stop there for right now. I have Dorita P., John K., Julie E. B., Pat K., Cindy B., Stephanie L., and Patty D. Please share with us, Dorita.
Thank you, Kathy. Hi, my name is Dorita P. from Cleveland, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And the word that's sticking out for me is futility. And I like words, and that's just one of the words I like to say, not necessarily the meaning, but I like to say futility. And that was my life. That was my life. And useless. I was useless. You know, I was judging myself by my intentions, but the world was judging me by my actions. And I wasn't doing much. I would go to work and come home. And eat like the previous share, you know, I just ate, and I isolated, And I can just close with just this. I mean, so I've been in program since 1999, and I lost over 100 pounds. I'm at a normal weight, and I tell newcomers at a meeting, you know, there's a million things that has helped me, but if I could just say one thing, I would say that it was the fact that I reached out and asked for help. And I wasn't raised to ask for help. I was raised by a single mom who taught us to be independent and self-sufficient and not to ask anybody for help. So that was huge for me to ask a woman, and I had a problem with women, to ask a woman, would she sponsor me? So for newcomers, I would just say, you know, ask for help. Ask for help. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Dorita P. John K., please share with us.
Hey, good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. You know, I always notice these sentences and think in many ways, this is sort of the pivot point in Bill's life. You know, you, like Dorita mentioned, the word that jumps out is futility. And then it is immediately followed by oasis. And if you think about it, if you're going through the desert and things are really, really bad and you can't find anything and you're about to die of thirst and you find an oasis, that's a pivot point in your life. And in a lot of ways, that's what a 12-step program is. It's an oasis. If I leave it, I'm going right back out in the desert probably, and it's not going to be a pretty thing. But I also want to talk about Ebby, Ebby, the guy they're talking about here. You know, if 12-step meetings had started as food and then maybe went to AA, there'd be an exact name for Ebby. Ebby's a binge buddy. You know, you think about, I know that when I was eating, I had a couple of people that were sort of binge buddies, you know, and it was great because, you know, otherwise you go out with people that don't have this thing, you got to eat normally and you got to act dainty, you know, and all the time you're eating, you're thinking, when am I going to get to go home and eat the way I really want to? But with a binge buddy, you can just let it out because they're doing the same thing as you are. But the thing about binge buddies is all they're really doing is normalizing abnormal behavior, you know. And just because they're doing that, it doesn't make mean that both people are right. They just give themselves the illusion that it's normal, you know. And as I remember when I was in my relapse, the same kind of thing can happen in program. I would go to meetings and I was eating and I was nuts and, you know, looking for all these crazy ways to deal with the food. And I would hear somebody who said something that I really resonated with because they were just as crazy as I was. And I used to say, well, that's it. And, you know, obviously that's the answer. No, there were just two people with the same crazy idea, you know. And it's funny because I always tell sponsees that, you know, if you hear something in a meeting, it sounds a little offbeat, come and tell me about it. Come and ask me about it because it may be perfectly good, but, you know, we have the most democratic organization on the planet, meaning you could be binging in the parking lot 2 seconds before you walk in the door. You get 3 minutes just like everybody else. And, you know, unlike in AA where somebody comes in and they're drunk, you know, we can tell very quickly and we tell them, you know, maybe you should sit down. In a way, nobody does. So they could say stuff that really can, you know, if you're in a binge, you can latch on to. But so, yeah, you know, binge buddies, they just normalize abnormal behavior. And the good news is Bill's at that pivot point. He's going to go from the futility, you know, a desert to an oasis. And we've gone from the down part of this story to the up part. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, John Kay. Julie E.B., please share with us.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered by the grace of God in Los Angeles this morning. I'm just really touched thinking about my Ebby. You know, I had no self. I looked deep inside. As some of you know, I was 300 pounds. I was bedbound. I had 6 medical specialists. And I would just howl and scream in pain. And this was all from trying to do a job that I had used to get most of my self-esteem. And I didn't know who I was in that job anymore. I didn't know who I was in my marriage. I had 3 kids. I didn't know who I was. I certainly didn't know who else I was outside of all these roles I was playing, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, false self, call it whatever you want. There's such a big separation between the person that would get up every morning and make effort, and the person who would crawl into bed at night and eat boxes and bags. And so I found a 12-step program around, you know, one of my core issues, learning to love myself and not live for other people. And I came eventually then to have a sponsor in that program, as I learned I could be who I was and that was enough, who just sat, and I always noticed the way she ate. I went up, I went down, I went in, I went out. One day she says, hey, will you go to this meeting with me? I'm getting my 25-year chip, and that was OA. And so I walked into what is now my home meeting with her, who had by then become my sponsor. And she had almost died in the food in her young adulthood. And now she's my age and a little bit older maybe, and just receiving her 25-year chip a couple years ago. And then I didn't think of it for a while. I was on a medically, quote, managed plan, and losing weight with anorexia, exercise bulimia. But then the weight, of course, started coming back on again, and life started happening again. And I was just crazy in the food. And she'd say to me, like, maybe you should try calling, you know, some other people. Anyway, one day I came, I said, what is this abstinence thing? What is this? And I went to my home meeting, and they loved me into this fellowship. And I got a sponsor, and you know, as it turns out, you know, her life had a lot of craziness and food still as a part of it. And a vision sponsor walked in, and I just saw that light in her eyes. I asked her what she was doing. She asked if I would agree to a basic abstinence. And, you know, the rest is history. It was hard work. It is hard work. But now as I travel, and my times and different things different all the time, I can be completely and totally abstinent, and I can be free of fear and resentment. Not just that, but free to be happy and useful. And with that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Kat K., please share with us.
Hi, Kat K., recovered compulsive overeater. I'm very thankful to be here this morning again. Thank you very much. As we read this and we think about Bill's journey, it makes me think about my journey. I remember going to the first Division for You conference, and I remember along the lines of Evie and Starry Eyes and People's Faith, beyond being in a place where people at a collective table had very diverse and different food management needs. It was interesting to be in a room of 1,000. Beyond that, I remember, clearly remember when it was asked, who's here as a recovered sponsor? And like hundreds of people stood up. And I just remember looking back in the room, and immediately my eyes fell upon this woman. And I was like, that's it. That for some reason, I had a feeling that needed to be my sponsor. And it turned out, when I asked her, I found out not only did we have a lot in common, but she had gone through like a very similar career and life progression that I was about to go in. And it's so unbelievable how higher power works in this lifetime. And I just remember being at that conference and really feeling the power of something that I had never experienced before. I had only experienced white-knuckled abstinence and only experienced a type of sponsorship where I used my sponsor as like my higher power, because I didn't have one. I would call her anytime I was struggling to cry about my problems. And it wasn't ever, I never learned to rely on my higher power. And when I went to the Vision for You conference, I knew that this is something, the power of higher power and the starry look in the eyes and just the energy, that is what I wanted in my recovery. And I could gladly say today that I can gladly say that I've joined that. So just feeling like I can connect with my higher power for my solution and not lean on human aid or my own aid. Whenever I tell myself, oh, I need more motivation, that's when I know things are not going down the right path, because my motivation will not solve my problems today. It's turning it over and doing the legwork and not feeling like I need to re-up my motivation to quote unquote, it's a very diet-like mentality in other arenas of my life. And I've been able to just be like, accept that I'm human, be where I am and do what I can for today and feel that it's good enough and not feel a forever nagging feeling of being insufficient. So thank you so much for letting me share. Have a great day.
Thank you, Kat K. Cindy D., please share with us.
Thank you, Kathy. Good morning. This is Cindy D., gratefully recovered in Texas. And, you know, when I read this morning, I started just being overwhelmed with gratitude, thinking back to the very first OA meeting I walked into and sitting there, and there was this woman that, she shared the word, she said, I'm recovered. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I never heard that before. What does that mean? And I listened to her share, and there was this incredible confidence and peace about her. And you know, she was tall and thin, but she was just beautiful. She just radiated this confidence and calmness that I hadn't felt myself. And then when she talked, she was telling a lot of my story. And after the meeting, she came up to me and introduced herself, and she gave me the information about Vision. And I'm so grateful because, you know, I immediately started listening to the Vision calls and got a sponsor, started working the steps. And, you know, today I can say I'm recovered and I'm on the right path. And I'm so just very grateful that God brought her to my life and that she was there at that first meeting. And then I'm also, when I read this today, unmindful of his welfare, and I started thinking about that, and I've been walking through a family crisis the last few days, and not walking through it very well, getting into my character defects, and you know, thank God for my sponsor, who's really done some good work with me to help me see my part, and to talk to my higher power, to see what I needed to do different. You know, working the steps, doing numerous tests on it. But I didn't realize until I read this morning, being unmindful of what my behavior might be doing to others in my family. You know, I got that I had the character defects, and I got that they were showing themselves. But I didn't get this till this morning. And it's like, thank you, God, for more awareness and more honesty. And, you know, I'm so grateful that, you know, today I do have peace and serenity. I'm not in my crazy thinking, and that's all due to my higher power and continually asking him for guidance and help and doing the work that's put in front of me. You know, I said to my I was telling my nightly review partner today about how it was today, and she's like, it's amazing. And what I, excuse me, hear you saying is you've walked through the storm. You're on the other side, and this is what it looks like. And that was so powerful for me to hear that, because that's what recovery feels like to me, walking through the storm and coming out the other side and living in peace and serenity and gratitude. And I no longer feel like I live a life of futility. I live a life of purpose and hope. And I think it's wonderful that we can share this experience, strength, and hope with others, and maybe affect someone in the way my Ebby affected me. I'm just grateful for that opportunity. So thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Cindy D. Stephanie L., please share with us.
It's actually Stephanie N.
Oh, sorry.
Kansas. That's okay. You had so many here. Okay, thank you. The line that was jumping out at me most was where he says, we could have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. The eye jumped out at me so much, I could drink openly with him. And it was reminding me of my selfish expectations. What am I going to get out of this meeting? What am I going to get out of this book club? What am I going to get out of this party, this wedding, this, you know, study date, going to the movies, going to the wedding, funeral, whatever. It didn't matter if it wasn't about me. It was all in my head. It was all about me and the food and my expectations. And what am I going to get out of this situation? And so he's looking for this oasis. He's looking for this excuse to eat. And that was always what I was looking for, because I could eat how I wanted any day of the week, isolated in my home. And there was, but if I had an excuse, if I had somebody coming over, or if I had a book club, or if I had a wedding or something like that, it gave me an excuse, and it legitimized in my mind what I was doing. And so it was all about me and what am I going to get out of this. Until going through the steps, I was completely unaware of my selfishness in general, but my selfish motivations and my expectations and, excuse me, my ambitions. But now that I've been through the steps, I go to when people come over, or if I'm going to see a friend, or if I'm going to a wedding or a baptism or a funeral, I have the intent in my mind, how can I be of service? So the book talks about this spiritual awakening, this personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. So everything has to change. Everything has to shift. And so instead of thinking, what am I going to get out of this meeting? It's what can I bring to this? How can I serve this person? You know, our higher power puts these people in front of us throughout the day, and these are our opportunities to serve our higher power. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. So I have to look at every situation, every opportunity as an opportunity to be of service, to do the will of my higher power. And that is what keeps me out of the food. Ultimately, it's ridding myself of the selfishness, my selfish ambitions, and turning outward in how can I be of service to you. You know, thy will, not mine, be done all throughout the day. Anyways, thank you so much for letting me share. I pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Stephanie. And Patty D., please share with us.
Hi, this is Patty D., gratefully recovered in North Carolina. I think what struck me in this passage was the phrase where he says, unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. And it reminded me of when I was in the food, I would be never thinking of other people's welfare. And I remember grocery shopping and times when my husband would have said to me, I'm cutting back on sweets, I want to lose some weight. And I'd be grocery shopping and think, oh, there's that ice cream he really likes, well, I'm going to get it for him, because I knew I would eat it too. And, you know, when the holidays would come around, excuse me, I would really start getting all excited because I would make all these treats for my kids, knowing that I really wanted to eat them. And it would give me that justification to eat them, even though I knew I was making this incredible amount of them. And there was no way that the kids, who would only be here for 3 days, were going to eat all this stuff. But it justified me getting to eat it. And it was never, you know, thinking about other people, it was about me. It was giving me that excuse. And it wasn't until I was in the program that, as other people have shared, I realized, wow, how selfish I was. And I just didn't, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I lost my headphones there. But I just didn't care about other people. And this program has just helped me see that, and God has helped me focus in on that character defect, and my recovery has helped me stop thinking about myself and not only recover from the food, but focus in on that defect. And my 10-step partners have helped me daily look at it and work on it, and God has helped me do that too. So I'm so grateful for that. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patty D. Okay, I can take several more names. Who would like to share?
Jackie H.
Jackie H.
Kathy D.
Kathy D. Anyone else?
MJ?
Was that MJ?
Yes, it was.
Thank you.
Penny LC.
Penny LC and somebody K. Who was that?
Stacy K.
Stacy K. Okay, that's all we'll likely have time for. If we have more time, I'll ask again. Okay, Jackie H., please share with us.
Good morning, my fellows. This is Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. Great to be here this morning. I wasn't going to share this morning because I have a lot of stuff on my mind that I thought was so important. And as I've been listening to the shares and just quietening myself, I do want to share. And a couple of things stood out. Somebody's already talked about them as well, but I'm mindful of another person's welfare. I'm mindful of his friend's welfare. And I thought, wow, isn't that the personality? Isn't that the life of the addict? Whether it be food, alcohol, get anything, any of the addictions, that's just the addict right there. So consumed with, and that was me. Way before I ever started eating or drinking, I was this. I was just consumed with myself and unmindful about how my behaviors affected the people that I loved. And then the other thing is the futility thing. I was thinking about that, and I got a call at 12:30 in the night last night from my granddaughter, who is out on the streets basically in her addiction of alcohol and drugs. And I didn't known how to contact her or anything, but she had some clarity about her last night. And she called to tell me, instead of calling to tell me that I was a horrible grandmother and I should have helped her and all this stuff, she called to thank me for being a good grandmother. And so for a while there, she thought about the good things and not the bad things. But the beauty of that call last night, I had prepared a letter for her in my men's when I did my ninth step, when I recovered in OA, and I didn't have any way of contacting her. So here's this letter, and it's 12:30 in the morning. And I remember having this letter tucked away in the event that I was ever able to see her or talk to her. And I was able to make my amends to my granddaughter last night. And the futility thing, there is none of that in my whole being right now. And as I've walked through this and navigated through this, and I will do a 10th step on it, not because there's a resentment, but there's a disturbance of, do I need to do more? What do I need to do? All that stuff. And God told me today, just be grateful. Look for the things to be grateful for. Don't look at the problem, because I was starting to kind of look at the problem. But look at the blessing. Look at the gratefulness in this. My God, you've got to do your amends that you thought you would never be able to do. And then the answers will come. And then I get to ask God, is there something that, okay, I'll wrap up. Is there something that I get to do for her? And if so, you tell me what it is and I'll do it. Instead of running off with my head half cocked like I would have in the past. And I haven't had to eat over it either. I haven't had to eat. I haven't had to drink. I haven't had to do any crazy stuff. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Jackie H. Kathy D., please share with us.
Hi, this is Kathy D. in Colorado. This is my first time sharing on this meeting, and it's a real privilege. I've been coming to OA for a very long time, and I had 10 years of honeymoon abstinence and then 14 years of struggle. And I am thankful today that the food, the abstinence is mostly not a struggle. So what really kind of spoke to me in this reading is the spirit of other days. And that for me has been the very hardest thing to let go. I had high old times with eating. Eating comforted me. I'm a person who tends to have a ton of anxiety. And on this road to emotional sobriety as well as entire abstinence, it has been tough. And there are times that I just feel like I'd rather go back to the oblivion that food provided. But just being in contact with recovered members keeps me on my path and makes me realize that if I just hang in here, better times come. And I have had better times since my visions journey of over a year ago. The other thing is staying on this oasis, this island that somebody else was talking about. If we don't, we go back to the desert. And I'm finding that as time goes by, I'm needing to have more and more sort of, I don't know what to call it, but safety nets to keep me on in the oasis, on the island. And that's okay because it means that recovery is taking precedent in my life. And when recovery takes precedent, my life is amazing. If it's the priority, my life is amazing. So anyway, I'm just so thankful to you guys who show up every morning, and I'm recovering. I don't feel like I'm recovered yet. I don't know when that time will come, but it sure is great to be abstinent today, to be in the program, immersed, surrounded by you guys. And that's it. Kathy in Colorado, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy D. MJ, please share with us.
Hi, MJ from Arkansas. Again, thank you so very much. I'm recovering overeater 5 months in. And, you know, two things stuck out to me pretty strongly. And one was my buddies. For 40 or 50 years now, I started to lose my old buddies and I've gained new buddies. Buddies that made me feel normal, that made me feel okay. Because, oh, maybe our jobs are successful or our houses are put together. But they've been my binge buddies for a few years now. And so for the last 4 or 5 months, I've noticed that I'm changing. And not just physically, but spiritually and emotionally. And I can see clearly. And I can see these binge buddy times and the weekends of hanging out with them. And who I've chosen and who I've lost in my life. And I'm ready to wake up and to relive and to rethink, and it's a good thing. And then that brings to the fertility, you know, as I'm thinking about today, early on, yesterday was Valentine's, and there's so many people that in the program or in my life that I wanted to reach out to and see, are you okay and how are you doing? Because I am not only changing and feeling healthy physically and spiritually, but emotionally, I'm actually becoming a new person, a person that I thought I could be years ago and gave up hope. So I just want to say thank you to all my buddies, my fellows there that are not my binge buddies, my fellowship here with all of you. You are my non-binge buddies. And I want to thank all of you and my sponsor. And God bless you all and have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you, MJ. Penny C., please share with us.
Thank you, Kathy K. This is Penny L.C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. Good morning to everyone on the line. It makes me think in this paragraph of the pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. You know, the fact that he'd not seen his friend for years and, you know, didn't know what he would be finding when he opened that door. I mean, his friend could have been back in the alcohol, but he also could have been sober. And yet he didn't care. All he cared about was the opportunity that was ahead of him to drink in front of somebody who used to be a drinking partner with him, who wouldn't, you know, who would accept him for drinking. And boy, oh boy, as it's been discussed, I was in that place. I would seek out the people that I felt comfortable with, that had not only my eating behaviors, but my moral compass, my same moral compass, you know, telling white lies, telling half-truths, that was all okay, right? Not following through on commitments, oh well. You know, all of that life, those situations in life that I never, you know, really came up to my own expectations, much less anybody else's, because I didn't care when the disease got so bad. And here, Bill doesn't care. Bill's going to drink openly and hope that he, even if it's a party of one, he's going to sit there with his friend and, you know, recapture the spirit of the old days. I am so grateful today that I don't even think about the spirit of the old days in terms of wanting to recapture it. I am so grateful that it is not what's, you know, my focus today, that I can instead focus on my recovery. This is, you know, this is a turning point for Bill. This is where he learns about a different way of doing life. And someone is going to, you know, this, his Ebby, his friend who's only been sober for a couple of months, I understand, and yet he's going to come and bring him a message that's going to change everything for him if he's open to it. And I am so grateful that when that message was coming to me, I was willing to see that message as a possibility and be willing to be open to it and to be willing to do the work. Just do it. I could need it, I could want it, but I needed to do it. And grateful that I have and continue to each day, knowing that my abstinence is contingent on what I do today. And I'm grateful to be able to know that I can focus on being of service, as others have mentioned, and grateful to be there. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny Elsie. And Stacy K, you'll be our last share today.
Good morning. This is Stacy K. Thank you for your service, Kathy, and thanks everybody for sharing. Great shares this morning. Yeah, he was sober. And then he says, you know, that he was amazed. And it is. It's like, here's this miracle standing right in front of Bill. And he knew. He knew it had to be something amazing, because Ebby drank like Bill, right? He acted like Bill. Bill probably thought Ebby was crazier than him, you know? And so to be able to see him with these, you know, these beautiful eyes and see him sober, at some level, even before Ebby started talking, you know, Bill probably started wondering, you know, and having maybe, a little hope maybe. And then, you know, to kind of tie that into my experience and getting recovered today, I came through some other rooms and learned so much and got so much from these 12 steps. But the food was the last thing to go. And I came to these OA rooms like a lot of other people quite a while before I got recovered. And, you know, maybe things got better for a time, but I couldn't have any continuous, you know, abstinence, any continuous recovery. It always seems that, you know, I always went back to the food. It was always when things were tough, you know, I could do that. And then came you know, the timing had to be perfect, right? Just for like Abby and Bill, for me, the timing had to be perfect when all of a sudden I get this email, because I was on an email list, you know, about this meeting. And I really craved the fellowship in a way. And so that email and the timing of me maybe being done or being desperate like Bill at that stage, I was open and I went and I found my sponsor and I went through these steps quickly. And it's a miracle when that can happen, right? And the other thing I was just thinking about, and I'll close with this, is that Abby came to Bill, right? And today we have all these hundreds of thousands of people joining this line and they're coming to us. And I just think about, thank God that so many of us have recovered and so many of us have, you know, are available to sponsor, because and it's maybe easier to find, but, you know, we got to reach out to the newcomer too. We got to be reaching out locally to, you know, in our meetings and talking to those people that are still suffering, people that we've known for years, maybe that were suffering for years, just like us. So anyway, I'm grateful to be here. Thank you all. That's all I have.
Thank you, Stacy K. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Jackie H., would you please read on page 164, where it begins, "Our book is meant to be suggestive only." Thank you. Jackie, press star one. I don't hear you. Julie E.B., are you able to read that for us?
I can indeed. I can do it, oh. Kathy.
Thank you very much, Julie.
Oh, this is Sherry K.B. I can do it. I don't hear Julie.
Oh, okay, Sherry. Great. Go ahead.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose.
I lost you, Sherry.
This is Julie E.B.
Kathy?
Okay, let me just see. Is Sherry still
I'm
there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do it again. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. But the answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.